Hi, I'm Marion McPartlin. Today on Piano Jazz, our guests are the two masters of irony and erudition, Steely Dan, whose music encompasses the entire realm of hipness, as well as being melodic, swinging, sly, subtle, all of those things, a musical Rubik's Cube, and they're here on Piano Jazz to sing and play everything from Asia to Ellington. And it's just great to have Donald Fagen and Walter Becker here. And not only that, we have Keith Carlock on drums and Jay Lenhart on bass. How are you guys?
Hi.
Hello there.
Hi. It's great to have you here. Thank you for taking the time to come over and join us on Piano Jazz.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm thinking of all kinds of things I want to ask you, but first I guess we should do a little something so that people can hear how we're all managing to play together. And Donald or Walter, what do you think we should start out with?
Well, we were thinking of starting with an Ellington tune that appeared on an album with Coleman Hawkins, kind of a Coleman Hawkins meets Ellington album, and it's called Limbo Jazz.
That's wonderful. I never heard of that. Is it? I mean, did Duke actually wrote that?
Yeah, I believe so.
I don't know how I missed it, but I did. But anyway, it'll be nice to hear it now. Limbo Jazz. Okay. You know, I thought I knew so many Duke Ellington tunes, and that's one that has escaped me. I'm really thankful to know that that is yet another tune to add to our repertoire.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't remember it being on any other album except that Coleman Hawkins meets Ellington album, but it's a good tune.
Well, you were very big at picking up albums, weren't you, when you were teenager? You must have heard a lot of stuff besides Duke and Walter, too.
you know, when Donald and I met at college, we discovered that by looking at one another's record collections that we had been listening to the same jazz radio station, which was a jazz radio show, I should say, that was Mort Figa's show on WEVD.
Oh, Mort Figa, yeah, now in Florida.
Yeah, that's right. And we had, you know, the same basic repertoire of as listeners, and those were the days when you could get three albums for $5 sometimes, you know, and so we had a few of them.
But it's so amazing. How did the actual writing of songs grow out of that? Or did you both learn to play? Did you take guitar lessons and piano lessons?
I'm mostly self-taught. I took, you know, scattered piano lessons and then had some theory in college and so on, but and also a summer at the Berklee School in Boston. But I think both of us are pretty much self-taught.
And you both went to Bard, did you?
That's right, Bard College in New York State. That was our alma mater. And when I got there, I discovered that there was, I figured that the place would be crawling with musicians, but it turned out that there was only a handful. And Donald was in all of the bands of all the different styles of music.
I would crawl between from one band to another.
He was crawling from band to band, so I figured I should join up with him, you know.
You'd be playing Dixieland one day and Bebop the next.
That sort of thing, although more likely it would be some sort of avant-garde, fake it type of a band.
Yeah, I think actually the first time I saw you perform, Donald, you were playing... was it the Star Spangled Banner or God Bless America on an alto saxophone?
Yeah. Well,
and you had on a leather jacket with black feathers attached to it.
Yeah, and that was before Jimi Hendrix played his version of the Star Spangled Banner.
Well, that sounds like a good beginning. I hope there's some pictures of that.
Sadly,
probably not.
If there were, we would have bought them up long ago.
You know what I'd love to know is, like, how did you start to decide to write songs, and where did that come from?
Well, we met at school and realized we had a lot of the same interests in jazz and also other things, literature and humor, and we were had both been science fiction fans, and I think a lot of sort of a package of things that a certain subculture used to be interested in the early 60s.
Yeah, we felt we were somewhere in the middle of the rich mainstream of, you know, the cultural zeitgeist. Of course, as time went on, we were disabused of that notion. But, you know, there was a lot of stuff in the late 60s, a lot of cultural energy involving, you know, humor and, you know, sort of...
Oh, you certainly have plenty of that.
Yeah, and so we thought that, you know, why not combine all of these things, jazz, science fiction, humor, and am I leaving anything out?
Rhythm and blues.
That's
really, and rock and roll in one, you know, one package, and then...
Well, it certainly all came together, didn't it? Goodness.
Eventually it did. We had a little problem in the beginning with our songs being sort of too funny for their own good. Our early efforts were sort of... you know, as I recall,
they were just too hilarious.
You were just too hip. That's the problem. Yeah. We were just too hip for the times.
Too hip for the room.
Yeah. They were so funny. We were laughing so hard we couldn't even demonstrate them to anyone. You know,
that's right.
Well, have those gone by? Or are you still including them in your presence?
Most of them never made it to a, you know, actual professional recording. You know, there's some demos floating around, but
boy, I'd love to hear those. Mm. Meanwhile, what have we got up? I want to hear more. I'm dying to hear more of something.
Yeah, what's...
What's... Donald, you seem to be the...
What's going to be?
Okay, we're going to do a tune. This is off our album, Asia. We're going to try to do it with a small band, but excellent band. So we're going to give it a shot. It's called Josie.
Okay.
One, two, three. Where
We're gonna break out the hat and hoot as soon as he comes home. We're gonna rev up the motor scooters when Josie comes home. To stay, we're gonna park in the street, sleep on the beach and make it. Go down the jam till the girls say when. Lay down the law and break it. Josie comes home. Josie comes home. So good. She's the pride of the neighborhood. She's the raw flame, live wire. She prays like a Roman with her eyes on fire. Joe, would you love to scrap? She'll never say no. Shine up the battle apple, shake them all down. Tonight we're gonna mix in the street, strike at the stroke of midnight, dance on the bones till the girls say when. Pick up what's left by daylight, Josie comes home. Josie comes home, they're so bad.
You know, somebody made the remark that all your lyrics are like poetry. And I sort of go along with that. I mean, some of the things you write.
Oh, thanks.
It's much more fun reading that than Edna Vincent Millay, I can tell you.
So, well, she also wrote dirty poems, though.
Oh, well, see, I didn't.
That's one thing we have in common.
I didn't put any of those to music.
She just didn't have a rhythm section like we do.
Not like the one you have. Wow. And that tune, Josie, I mean, the intro, I'll just have to take that and copy it down, because that is a tune all in itself. I mean.
Oh, thanks.
No, when I'm interested in how does the writing go? Does somebody write something and then the other person says, yeah, that sounds good?
Pretty much. You know, we get together in a room and start playing. And, you know, when one of us will have an idea, usually for either melody or lyrics or sometimes both.
Yeah, that's what I've wondered. And, like some of the songs, it seems like the melody has to kind of wriggle in there sometimes, like the words.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like the it isn't like a 4/4 time or anything, but it's amazing how everything works. Everything seems to.
Well, I think that's true. I think it is. That's one of the hardest things is to you have to kind of pry the music open and shove the lyrics in sometimes. You know?
We sort of decided at some point that we were going to try and write these little stories, little short story kind of things for the lyrics for these songs, so as not to have to write the same kind of pop songs over and over again. And sometimes we'll have a great idea for the thing, and then when you sit down to actually do it, there's very few syllables to do it in. So we occasionally end up with some things where there's a lot of words and a few notes. Kind of.
So sometimes we have to sacrifice the linear narrative, you know, just to get the idea. And so sometimes it seems like a story with some pieces missing. No, but
most of our fans have done a sort of analogous thing to their own brains and psyches over the years. So
you mean so that they just absorb the thing the way it is?
Yeah, their receptors have been sculpted, you know.
That's right.
Well, that's the best way if they're listening to your thing. Well, there's more to come with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. And on bass, Jay Lenhart, drums, Keith Carlock. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Well, being that you like Duke Ellington so much, it wouldn't be a bad idea if we did a Duke tune together. What do you think?
How about Mood Indigo?
I just happen to love that tune.
Yeah, me too.
So I think it would make a nice duet. And shall I start it?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. How do you learn those Ellington tunes off a record? You don't bother with sheet music, I'm sure.
Sometimes, but I don't know. Just off records mostly. I think the way most jazz musicians actually probably get tunes off records.
It's funny. I was lucky. Years ago in England, I had a boyfriend who, he started out with my sister, but she wasn't interested in jazz. So he switched to me, and that's how I got to learn all these Duke Ellington tunes. You know, I had thousands of records. And so, but you picked a really good one with Mood Indigo. I think it's a beautiful tune.
Yeah, there's a version I really like by Charles Mingus on a Mingus Dynasty album where John Handy plays the alto lead. It's really nice.
Well, you're into all those things, aren't you? Are you still now buying more jazz records? Or
just buy the same ones over and over.
And, Walter, who's your favorite guitar player?
I don't know if I really... Most of the guitar players
Some guitar players.
Just name one, huh? Well, my favorite jazz guitar player, I think, is probably Grant Green. Charlie Christian, Grant Green, you know. Certainly, yeah. Jim Hall is a great player. But there was something about Grant Green had that sort of swinging single-note style that I really
liked. And you know, Tal Farlow, of course, I can't hear that anymore. But I would love to hear you and Tal Farlow play a duet.
Wow. Yeah, well.
Oh, you and Jim Hall, that could happen.
That's within the realm of the possible, yes.
Oh, I'd have to All set right. that one up. Have to set that up. Well, it has fallen to my lot to play a solo piece, and I don't know if I can carry this off with you guys sitting around, but maybe you have a tune you could suggest that you'd like to hear.
How about Star Eyes?
That's a great tune. I haven't played that in a long time. I could probably... Yes. I don't know. There's something nice about... It makes me feel good about doing a tune somebody has requested. I don't know why that is. Why is that?
Because, one thing, just the fact that you can actually play what somebody requests is a great victory, really.
That's right.
As far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, you're taking for granted that I can actually play it. We'll find that out in a minute or two.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Star Eyes. Where'd you learn that song?
Oh, probably like you learned yours off a record or sitting in with somebody. And, you know, it's got that nice intro, which I thought about afterwards.
Right.
You know, and I thought, well, I can't somehow put that in. It's too late.
Yeah, I remember that there's a version, famous Charlie Parker version of it.
Sure.
It's the one I know.
Well, that was probably the definitive version.
Every song that Charlie Parker ever played is pretty much the definitive
pretty
version.
Much, yeah. Pretty much.
Pretty much. It tends to be that way.
I guess I was lucky to meet him during a few of his saner moments. And more when he was really playing well. It's nice to think about things like that. Well, there's more in a minute. My guests are Donald Fagen and Walter Becker with Jay Lenhart on bass and Keith Carlock on drums. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. So many things to ask you, and some of those songs, I like Gaslighting Annie. I have to ask
Abby.
You.
Yes,
Abby. I mean,
yeah, right.
What's it mean?
Well,
it's terrible. But
to gaslight.
Yeah, that's what
is a verb which comes from the film Gaslight, in which Charles Boyer tries to drive his wife crazy by, you know, doing little pranks like, he would move her jewels from one place to another.
Turn the lights down.
And the lights were always going down.
So she would think she was going insane. And
I saw that film.
Right. So that's if you're gaslighting someone. And I noticed in the, 80s, to the 80s, like a lot of, someone's girlfriend would say to their boyfriend, "Hey, you're gaslighting me," or "you're..."
Boy, that's something new for my vocabulary.
There it is.
I thought it was kind of not hip to ask, but then I couldn't help asking.
The question has come up before.
Yeah.
So
I guess that now, is that one of those songs where you had the idea, or did you start writing something and then it sort of, I don't know, you're looking at
I'm thinking... I seem to remember that we had the music for that. We had this sort of icy sounding chorus, and then we added a verse to it, and it was sort of a infectious, funk type of verse,
freeform
thing.
Sure,
and so somehow that led us to the idea of the gaslighting theme.
Yeah, sometimes you get a cue from the music as to what the song's about. Atmosphere that it creates, and will give you the idea as to what the actual story is going to be.
Well, I'd love to keep on asking the things, but I guess it would be nice to play something. What have you got up your sleeve this time?
Well, we're thinking of doing a classic jazz piece, which I'm familiar with the version by Louis Armstrong. It was on an album called Satch Plays W.C. Handy, and it's called Hesitation Blues.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that would be great. You're going to sing it?
I'm going to try.
In a Satch-like
Definitely
manner.
Not, no.
Okay.
No.
I better bring out the handkerchief.
Yeah.
Okay.
That high brown of mine, tell me how long. do you say? Can I talk to my brown? Storm last night, called the wise all day. Tell me how long do I have to wait?
Funny, that is one tune by Louis. I'm not that familiar with it. Really good to hear it. He would have loved that.
Oh well, I don't know about that, but
well, he would.
He's, you know, he's so great. I don't really you know, it's hard to you know, think of myself in the same business in a certain way, because I just, you know, sort of think he's so fantastic.
Well, but you know, it's nice to hear that song done in this day and age. I mean, usually you don't. You might hear a Louis record but doing it, but you don't hear somebody else doing it, which is kind of nice, I think.
And yeah.
It's a style of blues, I think, that has been eclipsed by other styles.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's true that sort of a more, I guess, Memphis area style of singing blues, or Delta blues style, probably dominates rock music, you know, more than that sort of jazz style of singing blues.
It's funny, I've never really gone into it, but I mean, to me, that is like a classic blues.
Mm-hmm.
And just hearing it makes me think about him and what a joy he was.
When did you first meet Louis Armstrong?
When Jimmy McPartland, my husband, and he was showing me the delights of Broadway in the, I guess this was maybe 45 when we got back from Europe, and Louis was playing in a place called the Aquarium on Broadway, and the door was open, and Louis hollered out as only he can, "Hey, Mick Partland!" He always called Jimmy Mac Partland. So he says, "Come on in." So we went in. So that's how I met Louis, and, you know, firm friends ever since. And listen, don't stop me, else I could, you know, babble away here.
No, it's great. You know,
Anyway, somebody asked me how, you know, you've made such a tremendous success with your music. I mean, do you think it's changed the music at all? Are you doing things differently from you where you did? Does it keep changing? Or are you sort of...
I think that it's all changed. it's evolved a little bit. I mean, I think we're fundamentally doing the same thing, or trying to do the same thing that we were trying to do at the beginning. And we've just refined our method a little bit, for better or worse, depending on, you know, how things come out on some particular day. But I think it's pretty much the same basic idea that we had, you know, back in the 70s.
Of course, what's wonderful, and I wish we could have done that here, was to have all those people like Chris Potter, the backup singers, and that is a big part of what you do, is a wonderful jazz interludes that come either in between verses or at the end of a tune.
Yeah.
Like that West Hollywood, I forget the title.
West of Hollywood.
West of Hollywood. Uh-huh. The end of that is the most wonderful jazz with Chris Potter and a whole bunch of... Right. Oh, that is terrific. I mean, that's... Anyway.
You know, it's funny, but the idea of structure, like the way we structure the arrangements, I think more and more we've been going back to Ellington and to even like Jelly Roll Morton, as far as they had an interesting way. You know, it wasn't just a verse chorus, or they had little breaks and all kinds of little embellishments, and you know, they'd written out sections that I think really make you know, tunes better.
Like having that Ellington piece, East St. Louis, mm-hmm. I mean, things like that. It's great, I think, for the younger people to hear. They never would probably hear those otherwise.
Yeah, right. Well, a lot of people think that we wrote East St. Louis Toodaloo, but it was Duke Ellington, of course, and we were just glad to get to play it.
Well, I hope you'll do more. Meanwhile, you and I are going to play some two pianos, aren't we, Donald?
Yeah, and speaking of Ellington, we're going to do a tune, Things Ain't What They Used to Be.
You know, Mercer wrote this one, I guess.
Oh, is that a Mercer song?
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened was they were doing a record date, maybe you know this, and Duke called up Mercer and said, we just need one more tune, quick, write something and come down here with it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yeah.
And he did.
Uh-huh.
That's what
happened. It was a good one.
Yeah. Oh, Mercer had a lot of interesting things to say. And so let's do the tune. One, two, one, two. Thank you. Well, I thought we did a great job with them. Things ain't what they used to be, don't you?
I liked it. I thought it was very inspiring.
It's funny, I never get tired of that thing, and I sort of like to use it myself with the trio as a sign-off tune, thinking to myself, Duke always did this. You know, I always like to sort of do what Duke did, including stick my foot out and use my left foot on the pedal. That sounds silly, but seemed good at the time. Well, I should ask you, in fact, I'm going to ask you, what's new? I mean, what are the new things coming out? Is there something you're working on?
Yes, we've been working on an album, which at the time we're speaking right now has no title yet. But we've been recording it in Manhattan through the summer.
Well, if I know you, or either one of you, will come up with some outrageous title. Well, there's more coming up. My guests are Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, with Jay Linhart on bass and Keith Carlock on drums. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. This next tune is to be Chain Lightning.
That's right. This was a tune from an album called Katie Lied, which came out in about 74, 75.
I don't think I have that one, but I shall probably collect it. Okay, dying to hear this one. I even get to play on this, don't I?
Yes, you do.
That's great.
One, two, three.
Little man,
you know, that's a chain lightning. It's sort of and just another way of doing the blues, isn't it?
Yes, it it doesn't go exactly where you think it's going to go, but it's basically a blues.
But there's so many variations. It's nice to hear another one.
Yeah, blues is an amazing form in that you can, and I think part of what makes it great is that you have certain expectations that it's going to, you know, do something fairly simple, and then if you just give it one little twist, it makes it interesting.
Yeah, and then you say, see, it didn't go where you thought
exactly.
It was going to go.
That's kind of a nya-nya kind of a thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is so wonderful. I hate to quit. Unfortunately, we only have time for one more tune, but I've just loved having you guys on the show. Thank you so much.
It was great being here.
Yeah, you're a great hostess.
Well, thank you. And you both are great guests, Walter and Donald. And I guess you've got something planned to wind up with.
Yeah, well, we thought in honor of the stock market, which at the time of our recording is going through some interesting thrills and chills, we're going to do a tune called Black Friday, which of course was the Friday that the stocks crashed in 1929.
That sounds, which should be pretty interesting. Let's play, or you will, or I get to play an E.
Yeah, you can hit an E once in a while.
That's fine, that suits me fine.
It'll work out.
Okay.
Or any note of your choice, really.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I like about this music, that like everything fits.
Yeah,
me too. All right.
Thank you.
was cool.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guest Steely Dan, singer-pianist Donald Fagen and guitarist Walter Becker, with Jay Linhart on bass and Keith Carlock on drums. Join us each week at this time as Marian welcomes other outstanding artists for an hour of conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Shari Hutchinson. Recording engineer Duke Marcos. Assistant recording engineer Dan Hoppler. Mastering engineer David Mitchell. Production coordinator David Lyon. Executive producer Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Learn more about the artists and music on Piano Jazz on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. Support for this edition of Piano Jazz was also provided by the Baldwin Piano Company, Borders Books and Music, and Jazz Times Magazine, since 1970, delivering jazz news and opinion, on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.